All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of Pseudo Intellectual Live. If you're not aware, we do these streams every Wednesday at 11:30 Central on this channel. Thank you so much for being here. Today's guest is someone who I've been following on YouTube for years and someone who, you know, I'm fortunate enough to call a friend. He's a great guy, great content creator. He is social media influencer and vlogger, Sean Fitzgerald. Sean, welcome to the show. It's been I don't know how long since we've been on a stream together, or if we ever have been. No, we've definitely done it before, but it's been a hot minute.
I think it was an election stream a while ago on Odyssey.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right.
That was the last time. But thank you for introducing me exactly as I asked, as an influencer for the next generation.
Yeah, social media influencer. So we have so much to talk about today. Like, this news cycle lately is crazy, which is, I don't know if you feel like this, but it's always a mixed blessing as someone who does like videos, because it's like there's so much to talk about. Great. I don't have to, you know, rack my brain for content, but also there's too much to talk about. You want to get the videos out as soon as possible. It's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah, I just need it to be spread out a little more, because it's like I want to make stuff and then I'm like, oh, there's nothing to do on Saturday afternoon. And then Saturday night, six stories drop. Bridges are collapsing. People are getting into it legally. You know, people are leaving the left allegedly. It's too much.
It's too much. I know. I don't like the feast or famine. I just want like constant little, you know, where people are giving us consistent stories. But
the,
you do.
The Illuminati running the world need to really stagger their stories. I'm getting
I agree. For us vloggers, it would be much better. But okay. Your videos are amazing. You have kind of the specialty when it comes to talking about crime. Your background is in criminal justice, hence your moniker, Actual Justice Warrior, which I find clever still. Let's talk about that, because, you know, when we watch the news, it kind of seems like there's a lot of crazy crime going on. I feel like, honestly, I cannot open X without seeing someone like actually beaten potentially to death, shoved in front of a subway, just like terrible things, probably not good for the collective psyche of people who see it. But at the same time, we are also hearing that actually crime is going down. It's not a problem. Why are you worried about it? What is the actual truth here with the recognition that is probably going to change from city to city, but overall, is America experiencing, I guess, a crime wave?
I would say yes. It depends on when you start counting. So pre-Black Lives Matter riots 2019, crime is up compared to that. It's up in most major cities. Some are, I'm sure, have gone back down. But if you started counting like yesterday and then to today, then crime is down by comparison, which is what a lot of people do. They say, oh, well, murder is down in 2023, therefore no big deal, but it's still up in comparison to its previous lows. So it's kind of like fluctuating. Certain cities are significantly worse off. St. Louis, of all places, did pretty well recently. They dropped their murder rate 21%. They were one of the worst places in all of the country forever. But Kansas City blew up in terms of homicides. And I think this is due to differences in policy.
Okay, so I guess when COVID hit, obviously there were a lot of issues. Also, it was the summer of love. What do you think is kind of driving the continued criminality, though? Because like you said, it's down from its peak, but it's still up overall, especially from, I guess, like pre maybe 2020 levels. Why has this happened? Like, the pandemic is over. Why are we not just going back to how we were before?
Well, I think the policies have changed. Like, the defund the police movement, you know, people will say, oh, well, the police never really got defunded. It's like, well, first of all, that's not true. They cut the funding in these departments, and now they're spending more money in overtime. And those staffers that left never came back. So there are consequences to that. But there's also different various reforms. Like, one of the ones that I harp on is New York State bail reform. And recently, the John Jay College of Criminal Justice released a study saying, look, bail reform is an overall success because recidivism is down slightly. And then if you go into the data, the offenders that we're worried about, the repeat felony offenders, they're consistently offending more than they were before because they were released. So, like, you know, there's ways to hide the numbers and all that, but I think it's bail reform. And even in that study, which is paid for by an organization that supports bail reform, they acknowledge that the reforms to reforms, because it was super broad when it was originally passed, coincide with lowering crime rate in the state of New York, because it's a statewide law. So the broader bail reform correlates with higher rates of crime. And every time they've pared it down, we've seen reductions. So it's definitely policy in my mind that's like driving this.
So, I mean, when people started talking about bail reform, a lot of the stories that they trotted out as like, oh, this is why this is important, were, you know, hey, did you know that there's this one guy who spent like years in jail and was never actually like convicted of this nonviolent crime? Isn't this wrong? Shouldn't we try to stop that? And I think just at the face of that argument, a lot of people would say, like, yeah, you know, hang on, you haven't actually been charged with anything. It is unfair. Why are we keeping people in jail, especially if there's not necessarily a risk that while they're out, they might offend again because they don't have much of a record or what they're actually being charged with is not violent. Is that not what bail reform is now? Just, you know, like trying to, I guess, make sure that people, especially maybe low-income people who couldn't make bail, that they're not being locked away without actually being charged, because that's for the longest time how I have seen the issue of bail reform presented. But then obviously we can contrast that with what's actually happened. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I would say I'm actually sympathetic to that argument. And to be clear, the whole point of having a right to a speedy trial and the writ of habeas corpus is because back all the way to English common law, the expectation is that you would be held, and bail is supposed to be a courtesy. You put down collateral in place of yourself so that you return. So the reason we have all those things in the Constitution is because you were expected to be held awaiting trial, but trials take way too long. People have a case in that regard. But the problem with New York State in particular is that judges do not have judgment like they do in 49 other states and the District of Columbia. So what they would do before bail reform is use the dollar amount as a proxy for dangerousness. And now that they've taken that ability away, you have all these different crimes where people just get, it's a same day automatic release. And even if they do set bail, they have to assess the income of the person so that they can be able to pay it. So we have absurd scenarios where people are accused of multiple attempted murders, they end up getting out on bail. Or if their crime is not even eligible for bail, they'll release them on their own recognizance or release them with an ankle monitor, even if the evidence is pretty solid against them or like they present a serious threat, like the double murder, but they didn't have enough evidence to charge the murder dismemberment out in Long Island.
So, I mean, who is pushing for that idea? Because I think when New York City first started saying, hey, we're going to do bail reform, I think it was actually pretty popular. A lot of people were like, yeah, let's do that. It kind of seems like we were promised, hey, this is not going to apply to people who are violent, because we're going to keep those people, or in case they would be violent, this is not going to be applying to like career criminals where they have this huge rap sheet. It seems like that is exactly who that is applying to, though.
Yeah. So one of the things that even left-wing people who voted for this and supported this that have now turned against it say and acknowledge is that they say it's only nonviolent crimes, it's only non-serious offenses, but one of the strategies that ends up happening with these reformers is that they'll reclassify a bunch of different crimes into the nonviolent category. So in California and in New York, you'll end up in a situation where strangulation is considered a nonviolent crime, which is kind of insane because—
How and why? Strangulation. I feel like that's pretty violent.
You know, every once in a while, you got to strangle somebody. And in fact, in the original bail reform, it was just not bail eligible in New York. But then in the amendment that they put in 2020, because they're like, this is crazy, it was only eligible for you to be held on that if you had been a family member and you had a prior order of protection against that person, which is ridiculous. So you could strangle your girlfriend or your boyfriend, but as long as you're married, then that's technically family, then it's okay. Then they can have some judgment on you. So they amended.
Well, families don't strangle a little bit. It is what it is.
They were trying to get Homer Simpson. Like, he's evaded justice for so long. So they only applied it to family, but then they changed it, but it's still only family members. So if I go and strangle somebody like on the street or compress their neck or whatever, restrict blood flow to them, that's a guaranteed release, which, you know, considering a lot of this is inspired by George Floyd and the major theory on George Floyd is that the knee on the neck choked him to death. It seems a little bit like the most insane thing ever.
So I guess the question is, I still don't understand why. Like, I know the left, I mean, this is happening, especially in places like New York and California. But even from a leftist perspective, this is what it's hard for me to wrap my mind around why do this. I know they have a lot of sympathy for like, yeah, looting and stuff because, oh, you're just, you know, you always compare it on your channel, which I think is great, to Aladdin. These criminals are just like Aladdin. They're just, you know, little scamps who are, you know, having a hard time. They're just trying to feed their families and probably some street orphans that they've met along the way. But when it comes to stuff like strangulation, trying to minimize that, you can be really poor and not strangle anybody. Like that, I would assume most poor people are not strangling people. What's going on?
Well, you know, I make the joke about arresting poverty or arresting society. And the reason I make the joke is because it's true. Like the left, a huge portion of them, I know some people say it's like three people, but it's enough to get legislation passed, believe that crime is the fault of everyone but the criminal. It's society or mental illness or poverty or whatever. And they apply this to almost all criminals, no matter how violent, no matter how much it has nothing to do with economic gain, because they genuinely don't believe that there are criminal people or evil people. And it's just a fault of society. I mean, there was a guy recently, he shoved somebody on the train, which, by the way, in New York City, more people have died in the subway since 2020 than the previous 15 years from being pushed on the track. But they are just died total, but from being pushed on the track is a big cause. This person killed somebody and his brother came out and he's like, society failed my brother because he's mentally ill. And I'm like, okay, I mean, he might be mentally ill. I don't know. But like, you know, we can't arrest society, but we can hold your brother who just murdered somebody. Like
right.
But a lot of lefties really think it's the fault of society completely.
And so, you know, I've been saying that people should leave blue states, especially blue cities. I know the last election cycle, you were kind of hopeful against hopes, odds, that maybe there are people who are sick enough about the status quo, especially in New York State, that they may actually vote differently. That, all right, like maybe things are so bad now, we might actually get people who are otherwise leftist to say like, okay, I'm not conservative, but if my family isn't safe, well, then things need to change. Do you still think that that's a possibility? Are enough New Yorkers, do you think enough Californians are like looking at their cities where there's like violent homeless people everywhere, where they're like, hey, maybe I should vote a different way? Especially, it's not as if in California and New York, you can blame Republicans. Like, oh, if only we had more control as Democrats, we could do things differently. Because I think it's pretty clear, you guys could do whatever you want. These are choices you are making.
Yeah, I mean, I was big on Lee Zeldin. He did come within 5 points of Kathy Hochul, which is kind of amazing, because I think Cuomo's smallest margin of victory was 18 points in three elections, and he ran hard on the crime issue. They did vote for Eric Adams, who I don't like, but he was the most tough on crime candidate in the Democratic primary. So I don't think New York is as lost as like a Chicago, where the worst crime-ridden neighborhoods voted out Lori Lightfoot and put in Brendan Johnson, who hates law and order worse than Lori Lightfoot. So, right. So there is some hope and obviously on a statewide level, because bail reform is a statewide issue. A bunch of state assembly seats are up for grabs. I mean, Zeldin basically won the Republicans the House. They rode his coattails to win every seat out in Long Island, a bunch of seats in upstate outside of New York City. And he even flipped a lot of demographics in New York City, or at least moved them over. Like Asians are voting against crime. Hispanics are voting against crime. Some black areas, at least in the Democratic primary, are voting for the least pro-crime candidate. And, you know, but unfortunately, like the numbers are the numbers. And so many New Yorkers that I'm assuming were more right-leaning moved to Florida that it might just be completely hopeless.
Well, actually, you mentioned Long Island, or as you say, Long Island, because you're from New York. We have a clip of Anna Kasparian that I want to go over and kind of talk about what's going on at TYT, because you just kind of highlighted, I hadn't noticed, and I'm surprised because I do watch their videos, that Anna hasn't been on the network in a little bit. So we're going to talk about that, maybe do some speculation. First, though, I do want to say a big thank you to today's sponsor, Fast Growing Trees. So weather is getting out nicer, at least where I am, thankfully. Did you know that Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the country? Now is planting season, guys. They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreen, greens, house plants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. What I love about Fast Growing Trees is that you can actually go and they have a map that shows you, depending on where you live in the country, what the climate is like and what trees or plants you could reasonably have. And you know, it's not too cold or too hot for them there, which if you know nothing about planting, but you want to, is great for someone like me. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they also offer free plant consultation forever. Sean and I were just talking about this. We are kind of looking, at least on our end, we're shopping around for houses and it is insane how like landscaping can make or break a place. So if you want to take your place to the next level, please check out Fast Growing Trees. You're not going to regret it. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off. That's huge. Their first purchase when using the code Lauren at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code Lauren at checkout. Again, fastgrowingtrees.com with the code Lauren. The offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. I am of the age, definitely, where anything to do with home improvement is exciting to me. So check out Fast Growing Trees. All right, Sean. So you may be TYT's like number one fan and biggest listener at this point. Yes. You've done a lot of great videos talking about their different stances. For people who maybe are not as into their content as we both are, can you explain what's been happening with Anna Kasparian's journey a little bit? Can you set us up for this next clip that we're going to watch?
So, I mean, I am probably the most prominent responder to TYT. I've done it so many times. So, and that's partially because I have a membership. I watch live and I look for these clips and their unedited version of them from their actual show, because you'd be surprised what they say in between breaks. But one of the things that I've noticed, and a lot of people have noticed, is that Anna Kasparian has, people are saying, taken the red pill on crime, but she had a negative experience with homeless people where one of them actually sexually assaulted her, unfortunately. And she realized that a lot of the things that she voted for, and she said this on her show repeatedly, did not shake out the way that she imagined. Like, I've seen her repeatedly talk about how, you know, they'll vote for a ballot initiative in order to, you know, do something about these nonviolent criminals that are being held in jail pre-trial or sent to prison and given harsh sentences. And then after the initiative passes, they reclassify a bunch of crimes as nonviolent. I mean, in California, you can't send somebody who is nonviolent, and that includes violent crimes, to prison, period, point blank. You have to send them to county jail, and then the county jail is overwhelmed, so they get released over and over again. So they have the same problems that New York State has, but just because of a different method. And a lot of the reasons why they have these problems is because they've been baited and switched on these particular topics repeatedly.
So, I mean, that kind of, I think, is a reasonable response that a lot of people would see. Like, hey, you're someone who you've personally experienced crime. I think it's hard to say that Anna isn't still overall progressive, though. But when we look at how this has been received by the left, what do we see? What do we see? This is what I love so much.
Well, apparently Anna is bidding for a position at the Daily Wire because, yes, you know, she's so right wing. I mean, anybody can look at her Israel coverage and know that she will not fit in at the Daily Wire based on that alone. But she's also become more leftist economically. Like, there's this weird thing where if you stray one little hair, one little fracture on a particular issue, even if it's super basic, then you're out of the cult and you're immediately evil. And oh my God, you're best friends with Ben Shapiro because you did a show with him. I saw guys criticizing her for appearing with Grand Stefan, the finance YouTuber, on his podcast. Very nice guy, not political at all. But
yeah, but finance as a whole, that's pretty right wing. Let's face it, Sean.
He's a landlord. He owns property. Like, so, you know, she's evil for that. And it's just wild. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how absurd of a story she talks about. Like, she talked about this Suffolk County case that we're going to go over, where two people, couples, dismembered bodies were found inside this home. And when I mean in the home, I mean like parts of them were in the pipes and the drains. And it was so much blood and like guts. And I apologize to people in your audience that they had to condemn the house. Like, it is not suitable for human habitation. But as she talks about in her clip, murder, I'm sorry, disposal of a murdered corpse because they don't know who actually killed them. So this is what they had to charge him with. Right. Is not eligible for bail. It's not eligible for you being remanded into custody. So all they could do was give him ankle monitors. And by the way, one of them has already been rearrested again, because it turns out the people who disposed of two murder victims probably committed murder and also will commit other crimes. If you violate that taboo, we're kind of a little bit against that. You probably violate some other crime, other laws.
I did a video about this and I was saying it's really hard for me to imagine a situation where you dismembered a corpse where you did not also kill that kill that person. Yeah. Like I was just walking around, saw a dead body. Instead of calling the cops, which I probably could have if I had nothing to do with the death, I had to dismember it. But aside from that, I'm definitely not a violent person.
To be fair to these four people, we don't know if all of them participated in the murder. And honestly, like, look, I've dismembered a single dead body, you know, every once in a while that I just stumbled upon. But I think what makes this really suspicious, because everybody gets one, is that it's two people. Like they didn't die accidentally and for no reason they dismembered it. Like
simultaneous heart attacks that had nothing to do with the people around them.
Exactly. So it's two dead bodies. It's the most obvious thing. And she was responding to Joy Behar, of all people, calling this out to Governor Kathy Hochul's face. And Kathy Hochul was like, well, it's not bail eligible. Those are nonviolent crimes. Like, you know, when you dismember a murdered corpse, that's not violent. And maybe if you're lucky, in the next session, Governor Hochul will consider that, adding that to maybe a crime where you can be held pretrial. Maybe if you're good.
So we're going to check out that video from Anna. But first I do want to go over some super chats. Sorry guys. I see you. I just want to give you a little love. So J Max says, love AJW. His breakdowns are some of the best and his dry humor is great. Lauren, I find your content great for seeing conservative perspectives. Have you ever watched the Sitch and Adam show? If not, you should check them out. I actually have seen them before. I believe Anna has actually been on their show before. I should watch more of it though, because the couple of clips I've seen were really good. So
you've never been on Sitch and Adam?
Mm-mm.
Oh, they should invite you. I've been on Sitch and Adam. They should invite you. Boo, Sitch and Adam inviter.
Thank you. Sup, my dude. I was like, spermy dude? We've seen some bad screen names, but okay. Sup, my dude. Sorry. AJW, when you debate with Destiny, how do you not fall over in fits of hysteric laughter at the guy you're arguing with is named Destiny?
I mean, listen, it's from an older era where everybody have like YouTube handles or whatever. Like, you gotta accept it. And by the way, I am going to be debating Destiny apparently in that Minds panel where Lauren Chen is going to wow us with her stand-up comedy. Minds
panel.
Yeah, I'm on a panel with Destiny there and two other people because I come prepared and I totally know their names. But Lauren's going to do stand-up comedy there. That's really what's up.
Yes. So, guys, if you are not aware, Sean and I will both be at Minds Fest at the Vulcan in Austin, Texas, April 27th. It's going to be a hoot and a holler. You can find tickets in the link. It's down below. So, Sean, you're going to be on a panel with Destiny. I am doing stand-up, which is very exciting and terrifying. I'm also going to be on a panel apparently talking about whether America is becoming a communist country. And Sean, who are you with? Oh, yeah. So you're with Hannah Claire Brimlow, who is great as well, Dan Holloway, and Carrie Smith. All right, that's going to be interesting stuff.
And so if you use code AJW, Lauren doesn't get a promo code, but I have one. You get 20% off your tickets.
It is true. I do not have a promo code. Okay, so use code AJW. That's going to be a fun time, though. Those events are always great if you guys haven't been to one before. Spencer Harmon says, J-Mac is everywhere. I too love AJW. He's great. Go subscribe to him. His links are down below in the description box for X and YouTube, I believe. Charlie Rowe, how much money to get Lauren to read next ad like the ShamWow guy? I'm trying to remember what the ShamWow guy sounds like. I know I've seen the commercials, but I'm a cord cutter, so I haven't seen them in a while. It would not take a lot of money, honestly. It would probably take like, $30. I'm pretty easy with that stuff. Okay, John Hendy, Sean's friend Stephen Michael Davis theorized that Anna Kasparian has become jaded with TYT's mission and would eventually leave. Think he's correct? Well, I mean, we might as well get into it now. Right. Apparently she hasn't been on in what, a few days now?
I think that clip, I might have posted it Wednesday, so it's from the Tuesday show, and I don't think she's been on since that Tuesday show. And so, I don't remember her saying she was going on vacation, so this could be, she could have said it, I just don't remember it.
Yeah, okay, strange. I mean, honestly, Cenk seems kind of on the same page. Like she talks about it with Cenk and he'll be like, yeah, this isn't okay, but this isn't all leftist. I mean, we'll get into it in the clip, but I feel like the other people at TYT are really not on the same page as her.
Right.
But doesn't mean necessarily she's going to leave. Maybe they are like big tent progressive. Pierce Taylor says, thanks, Lauren and Sean. Good job. Thank you so much. And Deadpool Kid says, AJW, Hunter's boogeyman. Also, Destiny lost his marriage to a femboy. Oh, yeah. Is that Hunter Avalon? I haven't thought about him in a while. But he like got shot or something. No, his girlfriend did.
Yeah, I think that is Avalon.
Yeah.
Sending my thoughts to him. He was in a crazy situation not too long ago. So, you know, I wish him well in that regard.
For sure. For sure. All right. So let's get into this clip of Anna. That's pretty, I love it. I love Anna just as a presenter. I think she does, like, she's entertaining, and this stuff is great.
Dismembering a corpse and hiding a corpse after dismembering it. Not bail eligible. Not a serious crime. I'm not even kidding, guys. Like, when Joy Behar outlined that case, I was like, she's crazy. This isn't a thing. This isn't real. This isn't real. So I looked it up. It's real, guys. It's real. Listen, if being on the left means supporting this, then I'm not on the left, and I'm okay with that. So let me give you the details of the case.
It doesn't mean that.
Okay, I don't know. Let me give you the details.
We're all on the left. We don't want people dismembering folks getting released. Only a couple of lunatic.
Some do.
I know. What I was in the middle of saying is only a couple of lunatic activists are like, yeah, we're pro dismemberment guys being let go. Okay, whatever. You don't represent the left at all.
Dismembered bodies. It's so unfair to put them in prison. Okay, let me give you the details of the actual case, okay?
Okay, so, I mean, we're going to keep going. But first off, Pearl in the chat, I will be waiting for your Steven Crowder retraction. I am not retracting anything that I've said so far. We are going to talk about the Steven Crowder case. By the way, Pearl, I have personal experience with, like, everybody in this. So I'm just saying there are things going on that you don't know about that maybe people can't publicly, just humility for once. Also, open invitation to the show. Hey, but okay. Is Cenk right? Is this just the crazy activist? There's like three of them, not representative of the left.
I unfortunately he's not right. And I honestly feel a little bit bad because Cenk is pretty much in agreement with Anna on this particular issue, but for whatever reason,
dismemberment bad.
Huh?
That dismemberment is bad.
Yeah. But for whatever reason, people have taken away from this clip that Cenk was defending this and he's gotten a lot of heat for it. And that was like not my intention when I clipped it. But I would say it's a strong minority, but like a strong and dedicated minority can achieve almost anything in politics. Like, you know, they say when they did polling at peak Black Lives Matter time of defund the police among Black Americans, and 81% were against it. But guess what? Police departments got cut because of that 19% of that population and other populations that were in favor of it. Because again, the biggest predictor of you, if you're supportive of these policies, I believe, is if you make over $100,000 a year. So like the wealthy elite progressive who doesn't interact with crime at all, they're the ones voting for this. And they're also the donor class. So I think it's a minority, but it's a much more significant minority.
Right. Well, let's keep going because I feel like, yeah, it's probably true. Like of the left, like people who vote Democrat, this is probably not very popular. But I feel like among progressives specifically, actually not that unpopular. And obviously, like progressives are not all leftists. But honestly, I feel like amongst TYT viewers specifically, probably a lot of them are in agreement with stuff like this.
To be clear, among the progressives and the online left, this is the number one position because Anna's not just wrong or inaccurate to them. She's evil and doing the bidding of the prison industrial complex for stating this.
Yeah, she's in the pocket of big prison because she doesn't want to maybe herself again be attacked.
So four people were arrested in New York after body parts were found in Long Island. Okay, dismembered body parts. The victims were, two people from Yonkers, older individuals. Suffolk County police say 44-year-old Stephen Brown, 38-year-old Jeffrey Mackey, 40-year-old Amanda Wallace, and 33-year-old Alexis Neves, were charged with concealment of a corpse, tampering with physical evidence and hindering prosecution. They have not been charged with murder. Prosecutors told a judge there was so much blood in pipes, sink, shower, and toilet of the Railroad Avenue home in Amityville where the suspects were arrested that it was deemed uninhabitable. Police said they confiscated meat cleavers, butcher knives, flesh, and body parts. Attorneys for Brown and Mackey admitted that their clients lived in that home where the body parts and all that blood was found, but denied chopping up the 59-year-old woman and 53-year-old man whose last known address was in Yonkers. Wallace also lived with Brown and Mackey in Amityville. Police said that Knives is homeless. Okay, all four pleaded not guilty. The judge released them without bail. They were fitted with GPS monitoring and must report in person for in-person probation and surrender their passports.
I don't care about their passport.
So, all right, they have like ankle monitors, you said. So, yeah. I mean, problem solved.
You can hear Cenk actually say, this is why I feel bad because he's getting heat for this. He's like, I don't give a damn about their passports. But also, I didn't bring this up in my video, and this is an exclusive for this live stream. Anna's pronunciation in there, horrible. It's Suffolk County. I mean, her husband is Latino and she went with Knives as a pronunciation for Nieves. I mean, Anna speaks Spanish from what I can recall. Like,
okay, but as someone who basically cannot read, I have sympathy for her. It's not a Lauren Chen video unless I pronounce someone's name wrong.
And she did technically get Amityville right, but there was too much hesitation. The Amityville horror, that's like the one thing everybody should know how to pronounce from Long Island. But but it's so obvious that these people are there. First of all, they're involved in a murder and you're probably going to charge one or all of the four with murder in some way in the future. But at this point in time, the dismemberment was so efficient. They don't know that they didn't know cause of death. So they released them. Normally, a judge in a normal state, as in 49 states and the District of Columbia, can look at these circumstances and say, OK, we're going to hold you pending the investigation, at least for a little while, not in perpetuity, so we could figure out who we're charging with murder, because two people were murdered here. And by the way, Yonkers is in upstate New York. These people are in Long Island. This is not that close. I mean, there's a bridge that connects that you could get over, but this is not that close. Like, so these people, I don't know if they were lured over there. I don't know what the story is, but these are all things that I would want to investigate while these people are not released out into the streets, but they released them with these ankle monitors, and these ankle monitors don't do anything.
So you mentioned one person had already been rearrested. Do we know what for?
It was actually stealing from a CVS of all things.
Okay.
She had to get cleaning supplies.
Yeah. Well, she's probably starving, or he or she, and that's the only reason why they would commit crime. But this next part coming up is my favorite part of this video.
Dude, guys, like what? Okay, so did further research because I just couldn't believe it. Here's more. With 2019 state reforms, mutilation and disposal of murdered corpses are among crimes that are no longer bail eligible. The DA said the four went to barbaric lengths to cover the crime. What are we doing, Cenk? What are we doing? Someone tell me, what the F are we doing?
Yeah, look, no one signed up for this. I don't know how the hell any of these laws passed. I went to every progressive conference there was over the last 20 years. I never heard a single person saying, why don't we let the actual criminals go? Hey, if someone butchers someone and chops them up into little pieces, let's do the kind of criminal justice reform where they would be able to walk out free.
Yeah, come at me right now and tell me I'm the bad guy, because I want these people who dismembered corpses and tried to conceal the evidence in prison. Come at me and tell me I'm the bad guy. Come at me.
I don't, guys.
You guys are insane. Anyone who thinks this is okay is insane. And everyone else in New York has to suffer the consequences of this with random bag checks at the subway by National Guard troops.
Okay, Anna, I love you. It's so good. It's so good.
No, I'm very pro Anna. I always have been. One of the reasons I did a lot of TYT response videos is because compared to other lefties who were equally as bad and dumb, the Young Turks is at least entertaining.
100%.
And I'm glad, like, Anna, through her evolution, has not abandoned the screaming at the camera thing, cutting off Cenk and all that. But to the substance, this is the one part you gotta come down on Cenk for. Because he's like, not one progressive conference did he hear let the criminals actually go. What did he think? Abolish the policemen, abolish prisons, men. Like, this was obviously in there. Like, he can pretend that he didn't notice it. But yeah, there was a section of the left that was pushing for this, and they unfortunately got undue influence post George Floyd. It's just a fact. And they were saying it. I mean, he employed Sean King at one point, and this is something that he advocated for. And Cenk actually got cowed by the audience, and he tried to give a million caveats, to be fair to him, into supporting defund the police. He would say, okay, but what I mean by that is not no cops on the street, but he did embrace it. So he was against defund the police as a terrible slogan. Then he embraced it with 20 caveats, and then he went back to being against it. So there have been people that have advocated for this very thing, 100%.
Mm-hmm. And it's like Anna was saying, it's sad because there are everyday New Yorkers who probably aren't politically active or whatever. They're just living their lives. They now have to live with the consequences of, yeah, people who dismembered corpses just kind of being out on the streets with them. And it's a, I've visited New York before. There are great parts of it, but I fear it's becoming basically unlivable. I know my brother, he's kind of in finance. He's floated jobs in New York, and I'm just like, no, please, no. I already have anxiety. I don't want to have to worry about my brother every day.
Lauren visited New York, and we went to go eat with my fiance and her husband, then my girlfriend, and I was like, oh, we're going to go to the nice areas when I was in college that I would go to. Only a few years ago, some of them were looking real rough, and I felt a little bad. And like, you were giving me the look like, this is the nice area as like the trash. I'm like, it was before, but trust me. Like, this changed under de Blasio.
Yeah, rats like I have never seen before. Also, in apparently this thing that New Yorkers have, your fiance has it. It's like there's this app where you can see like live crime reports.
Oh, the Citizen app. Yeah.
Like, even that exists. That's nuts to me. I just... There are like a lot of cities where that doesn't happen. You don't need like crime happening everywhere is not such a problem that someone's like, you know what, let's just have an app, you guys. We can, and people apparently take videos of the crime sometimes, so you can click it and see what actually happened.
There was actually like Christmas time, because they report other things like traffic stuff on there. In my fiance's parents' old apartment, there was a person who stored a wheelchair in the hallway that was plugged in. And we found out on the Citizen app that the apartment was on fire before they knew it was on fire. So we called them. We're like, are you guys okay? And they're like, we're fine. We're like, it doesn't smell like smoke. They're like, oh yeah, now that you think about it, it does. So, and of course it was in the staircase, so there's like no evacuating. But so like, it's useful for other reasons. But I recommend, if you're in Philadelphia or Baltimore, you look at the Citizen app. Because when you find the murder hotspots and you realize it's everywhere, it's kind of amazing.
Terrifying stuff. All right, we're going to get to Crowder, all of the drama that's happening
before
there.
We get to Crowder, again, I just want to say Anna Kasparian, my absolute best friend, because she unblocked me from Twitter. And that was the agreement that I made with her through the internet. And Pearl, who super chatted, blocked me based on one tweet. So I'm not saying anything, but like, but I'm not making the same offer. Like, I already have a bestie.
All right. So, yeah, actually, so regarding Crowder, guys, I filmed a video about Jared's Twitter statement that he posted on X, filmed an entire video. And then since that, 17 different things have happened. So I told like my editor producer, like, we're scrapping that. We are just going to cover it live because there's too much. There's too much. And there's so much going on here. So we're just going to try to unpack it together. First, these chats. Deadpool Kid: if crime is going down, then how come there's more squatters and trespassers on private properties and grapes happening in subway stations? Well, clearly the answer to too much trespassing and squatting is abolish private property entirely.
I think the squatting, if you notice, happens in cities where they passed a tenant rights thing where you get a free attorney. Because it's like a no-cost perfect crime. And even though crime is down compared to, like, not 2019, but compared to last year in New York City, the subway is like it's worse this year than last year, and it's been worse the last 4 years. So specifically the subway is a huge problem, and that's because they don't arrest people for jumping the turnstiles anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, pure and simple.
Relevant. I know the first city rural. No. I'm sorry. Disavow.
Look, there's perks to both sides, but I understand why people don't want to be in the cities.
When we were in New York, you open up Uber Eats and there's 500 different restaurants and they're all amazing. That is nice. In Nashville, we're not even in Nashville, we're in the suburbs of Nashville. I've said it before. I could open up an Indian restaurant and it would be the most authentic Indian restaurant in the state of Tennessee. You go to a Middle Eastern restaurant here, they ask you if you want ranch with your shawarma. I'm not even kidding. Ranch. So, you know, yeah, pros and cons to both, but honestly,
you don't have sushi over there, right? Like, not at all.
It's really hard to get good sushi.
Listen, anytime in Austin, Nuance Bro knows a guy from San Francisco that moved to Austin. It was one of the best sushi experiences in my entire life. You got to come with us the day before. Like, it was unbelievable.
I love sushi, especially it's like, you know, if we have baby number two, I have to eat as much raw stuff as I possibly can right now.
That's science right there.
Science. Jacob Lowe, Jank mystified my the consequences of his own advocacy never changed Jank. Oh, yeah. He also, we didn't talk about this, but was running for president for a bit. So also that happened. Deadpool kid. Well, now, wait a minute, guys. Diversity of our strength. Don't you want to learn fine dining from Haitian migrants? I'm sure with a little Texas chainsaw flavor, it'll be spectacular. And Flaccid Phoenix. Can someone tell me who Steve Rogers is? Okay. That's fair. I talk about Marvel a lot. I should have caught that. I assumed it was like, because there's a sports guy who's something Rogers. I just assumed you were saying he's buff. It's probably a sports reference. And I was like, well, that doesn't concern me. So that's fair. All right. So let's unpack Louder with Crowder, or at least let's try to. So Steven Crowder, probably the biggest pundit in the conservative, or at least one of, I'd say he's like top five for sure. He's had a pretty turbulent go of it over the past couple years with regard to just internal stuff going on. I mean, you have Dave Landau left, and on Michael Malice's podcast, he kind of aired some things, at least his side of it, didn't paint it as a very good work environment. You also have the DW contract fiasco that, you know, didn't really look good. Then we have the news of his divorce. Very sad, of course, but also there is footage leaked, ring cam of him not being very charitable to his wife. Of course, we don't know other stuff that happened, but we at least saw that footage. Doesn't paint him in a good light. Then announcements that the divorce had been very acrimonious. Latest thing now is Nake Jared Metello. He goes by Jared Monroe on Twitter, who, if you guys have been around, he used to be almost like basically the co-host, or at least Crowder's sidekick every show.
I thought they were related for a while. That's how like crucial he was to the show.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, they basically gave off the vibes of like, we are like brothers. Like, this is like our show together. They seemed really tight. Eventually, Jared left the show, didn't really say anything about it, which is obviously happens. If it's just a job, like you don't have to do that forever. He hasn't really been in the public very recently, but he, a while ago, was on, what is it, Strange World with Quarter Black Garrett, and Dave Landau announced that he would be launching his own show in the Foxhole, I believe, which is going to be focused on masculinity and just kind of like men's issues. He posted on X, though. When was this that it went up? Just like yesterday? Yeah, the 26th, yesterday. This video where he talks about ongoing legal issues that he's been having with his former employer. Pretty clear who that former employer is, you know, Louder with Crowder / Steven Crowder. And he talks about basically, okay, do you want to try to summarize this video? There's a lot to it.
Well, he opens by saying that he received a cease and desist from Steven Crowder, from his former employer, and he received a 202 petition, which is a petition for him to be deposed. And if you look at the documents that have been posted online, that includes 15 other people, and the 15th person is like unlimited numbers of unnamed people that Jared said like disparaging remarks to. And essentially he's making the case that the NDA is overly broad, very restrictive. It goes on in perpetuity, and just fighting the cease and desist and the deposition have put him in debt. And he's already been in debt from the time that he left Crowder, and post him leaving, he was blackballed. So he's raising money in a GoFundMe to pay for his prior or his already accrued legal expenses and his ongoing expenses, which he was trying to file a counter motion to get out of the NDA because he thinks it's like it's unconstitutional.
Right. So we do have the court documents that Jared is referencing in his video. Shout out to Pearl. She's the one who I'm getting this from. So here it says that Crowder, Louder with Crowder, the organization, is asking to depose Jared because it says, All right, that's a different thing. Well, anyway, to your point of who Jared is being asked to turn over his communications with and offer testimony about, it's communications with Dave Landau, Hillary Crowder, Brittany White Turner, Sven Tiederman, who I think might be a Sven computer. Yeah. If you guys have watched Steven's show, you'll know was like one of the little co-hosts, part of the gang for a bit. Courtney Kirchhoff, who I think used to be part with Louder with Crowder team, Edward Parker, Everett Wade. I don't know who those people are. Aaron Luna, Jeremy Boring, CEO of Daily Wire.
Jeremy Boring spelled incorrectly.
Yes, I did notice that. Natalie, Deborah, Corzin, Garrett Morrison, employees and or representatives of the Daily Wire, and current and former employees of Louder with Crowder, and any other individual not currently known to whom respondent has made disparaging comments about Louder with Crowder and or Crowder. So there's just like basically like Crowder's legal team is just asking for all communications maybe that Jared has potentially brought them up for. And I also want to bring up this. Share this tab. There we go. It's explained here that the parties executed a confidential separation agreement. Upon respondent's voluntary departure, the parties entered in the agreement. It contains a non-disparagement clause. Louder with Crowder believes the respondent has been approaching various third parties and disparaging Louder with Crowder and Crowder to tortuously interfere with LWC's continuing and prospective business relationships, thereby breaching the agreement. So the fact that they have included Daily Wire, it seems to me like they're almost, they're alleging that maybe Jared was part of undermining the Crowder Daily Wire deal.
Yeah, I think if you go through it, it's something about like lost Rumble earnings or trying to interview with their contract post that. Like I haven't seen the Daily Wire portion, but I watched their the CEO's explanation of it. But essentially, he's alleging a conspiracy where Crowder's ex-wife or current wife that he's going through divorce with is at the top. That's roping in Jared, the Daily Wire, and all these other enemies of Crowder. But I thought I could be wrong. I thought it was to sabotage the Rumble deal. Not the Daily Wire deal. I thought that was passed because I think they filed this in October of 2023, but I could be wrong about the timing.
Yeah, I think they did file this in 2023, but I think the fact that they're naming people from the Daily Wire here, let me see. Like, yeah, Jeremy Boring, CEO, and anyone from the Daily Wire, I don't know if he's trying to also allege that in addition to the Rumble thing, they were also trying to mess up the Daily Wire thing. I personally think those parties had a good enough time torpedoing it themselves. They didn't need outside help to do that. But it's pretty crazy.
By the way, in that whole fiasco, this was brought up by Candace Owens on her Timcast appearance. And then Crowder said it was like an amicable separation when he was on. He said that they did a farewell show. And like, clearly that's not the case. So like, this was a red flag for everyone when he said that. And like, you know, usually in an amicable separation, one person isn't barred from talking about that amicable separation.
Right. Well, as other people have mentioned, NDAs, non-competes, those are actually very common in like entertainment contracts. They're really not, that's not unheard of. That's not unfair. I signed them before, but I've never seen someone taken to court and deposed over things that they potentially could have said or not, because they don't know. That's why they're being deposed behind the scenes. That's unusual. Like, I've never seen that before. You know, oftentimes when we have like NDAs and non-disparagement clauses, especially in media, it's for stuff you're saying publicly. The fact that they're asking to just have like all information, very, very unusual. I've seen people say, well, if he potentially broke an NDA and he's seeking to get out of the NDA, like, dude, you signed this. It's just, you know, it's not that big a deal. Like, you shouldn't disparage anybody. There are other allegations beyond the restrictive NDA that Jared brings up in his video. Let's see if I can not be a boomer for 2 seconds. Share this tab. Jared also mentions, he talks about a non-compete, which again, non-competes are not unusual. But the thing with non-competes are, is that actually they're illegal in some states, like I think California.
Right.
But the thing with non-competes in the entertainment sphere is usually non-compete means that, look, if you have a show with Daily Wire, you can't simultaneously have a show with Blaze TV. And I think that's like, that's pretty understandable. That's not that restrictive. And you can have different ones where it's like, okay, you have a show with Blaze, but you also have like, I can put out YouTube videos, you know, and other streams on my own YouTube channel. That very common. Jared talks about in his own video, a non-compete that actually, according to him, bars him from work in the industry entirely, even after he no longer works with Crowder. So it is, and I will say it is common that you can have a non-compete that extends to maybe like 3 months after your contract is severed. So you can't, you know, in January be working for CNN and then February you have your own show on Fox. Usually there, it's true. There's like a little bit of a breathing room, maybe 3 max I've seen is 6 months. This extended to years and was completely industry-wide, according to Jared.
And he also said, to be clear, that it wasn't even a regular non-compete. It was a non-solicitation agreement that Crowder's legal team said that they were going to argue could be interpreted as the broadest non-compete. And I don't know if you're going to play that part where he says, you know, what he tried to negotiate around that.
Okay, let's see.
A man with his first child on the way, the small victory I got from it. The primary reason I signed the NDA was for a small carve out in the non-compete clause, which allowed me to freely seek employment using some of my skill sets at another specific company. At least I could feed my family. That provision, however, was a lie. And upon starting my new job at the new said company, I was giving another one of these, a cease and desist, and was promptly, unlawfully terminated from that position. I added thousands more to my legal debt trying to fight back. My wife was very pregnant by this time, and without a financial safety net for groceries and a baby crib, much less a legal fund to file a countersuit, I simply had to let it go, trusting God had a plan. To that point, I want to say that I'm happy to report that he did have a plan and what was intended for evil.
Okay, so according to Jared's video, he's dealing with NDA that Crowder is alleging he violated, asking to be deposed. And I don't think he like responded. And like that's obviously if someone is like launching legal papers that caused some issues. The court has ruled that he does actually have to be deposed now at this point, I think. Right. But in that video, Jared also talks about the other forms of what he would classify, I guess, as lawfare that Crowder has been trying to launch against him. Now, earlier today, and this is why I didn't want to release the video I previously did, Crowder's team actually did respond. So they put out their own video about it. This is by Gerald Morgan. It's not actually Crowder on camera. Apparently they're going through mediation right now. Gerald is the CEO of Louder with Crowder. Also, sometimes he co-hosts. And they address I mean, there's so much going on here. It's messy. It's messy. So they alleged that actually the reason why they're trying to depose Jared is that apparently he and Hillary have been working behind the scenes to try to discredit Stephen in order to get more preferable divorce terms. Is that right?
Yes, that's one among many of the things that they allege that this is all. But to be clear, it's not even just specifically preferable divorce terms. It's for more money from Steven Crowder, as they repeatedly say, or Gerald repeatedly says throughout the course of this. It's for more money, even though they show a message that I think shines some significant doubt on that, because they show a message that says Hillary's team is like acknowledging that he's offering them more money than they would have gotten, but she replies that she wants more freedom. So it's possible, without seeing the terms of the settlement, that there's some kind of NDA or whatever the equivalent is in divorce court that they're fighting over, which would not be about more money. It would be about more
custody, maybe.
Yeah. Or well, custody is like a different, like, I don't know. It could be about the custody, honestly, but like, it seems like Hillary is fighting for something else, even according to the messages that they showed that supposedly right. confirmed that he offered more money. But he repeatedly says throughout this that it's never enough for her. So I just found that weird, because he's like, it's never enough. And then you see them and they read it. Hillary quotes it. She's like, I want more freedom.
So right. Not money necessarily.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So, and they also like talk about like issues with dogs here. It seems like it's a very, very messy divorce. And okay, right now, Jared is crowdfunding legal fees. I think that he's managed to raise over $70,000. Crowder just launched his own response, but I think it's important to understand that. So a lot of what's kind of being highlighted by Crowder's team here, they're using court documents that are, I think, public record right. to kind of show their side of the argument. Jared, if this NDA is as tight as he, you know, as it seems to be, he can't really respond with any of his receipts, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
Well, why don't they show the NDA? Why don't they show like that? And by the way, the dog thing was another, like, listen, I get everybody in America loves dogs. They're stupid about dogs. I understand that. But like, it's apparently a big dog breed that could be dangerous to children. And I would think if I were like gonna, if God forbid I had kids and I split with my fiance in the future and she had a massive dog and I had small children, I might want to bring that up, that that's a risk. How many times have we seen pit bulls like maul small children? So it's like, oh, she's
going to upset the pit mommies, Sean.
Yeah, I know. Well, she's like, they're she's going to take away my dog, you know, but it's like, but if the dog is a danger to the kids and she cares about the kids, why wouldn't she bring that up? Like there was a lot of not addressing the specific allegations. Like they didn't address that Jared said that they wanted ownership of his Twitter account, which, by the way, right. Crowder was very offended that the Daily Wire contract, which did not say that, supposedly said that, but apparently he did that to Jared. They didn't address the consistent legal bills or the blackballing him from, you know, the other company, but they threw out like the dog and like Hillary Crowder is greedy. And they said that Jared lied about being sued. I watched the 15-minute video. Go find me the time code where he said he was already being sued. He didn't say that. He said that he's raising money to pay off his already accrued legal bills and the suit going forward. But also, I do got to give full disclosure, I did donate to Jared's legal fund, specifically $1 more than Ben Shapiro did, because I thought that would be funny.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think I will highlight that since Jared came out with his video, he seems to be getting basically universal support. Same with, you know, Hillary Crowder's ex-wife. She's now kind of on social media, where previously she was very, very behind the scenes. I've met her before, but only because I was in Texas with Crowder's team at the time. Like, she is not a public figure in any way. In terms of like public opinion, like, not that this is definitive for anything, but it's just interesting to see that a lot of people seem to be rallying around Jared and around Hillary. I haven't seen much of an outpouring of support for Stephen, but it is interesting that in Gerald's video, trying to defend, I guess, the Crowder's position, he didn't bring up the allegations of blackballing from the industry. He says, oh, well, we haven't spoken in 6 years, blah, blah, blah. He didn't say like, no, he can work in whatever. He never addressed that allegation. And it is, I mean, it's just fact that Jared hasn't been in media at all since his departure from Louder with Crowder. But now he is launching his own show years and years and years after the fact.
He also said like some things that are just patently absurd. Like he said, like, listen, sure. First of all, he owned up to everything that Jared said about the legal stuff. And he's like, but we haven't initiated litigation against Jared in weeks. It's like, but that's not a long time. That's short. Yeah. Like he says that in
I've
there.
Been weeks without a lawsuit. Also, by the way, everything in this is alleged, just in case anyone litigious is watching.
Yeah, but look, I don't like we don't know, but we have to glean from what we have. But he also he said this, and I can't believe like this came out of his mouth, that he's trying to keep the legal costs down for Jared. Like, you know, the inexpensive litigation that you put somebody through. Like,
right.
I that's not a real thing. And by the way, he's the CEO of the business. So he has to advocate for the business. So a lot of people will like throw personal hate at him. I actually think that's totally unwarranted. He has to advocate.
This is his job.
Yeah. But it's not even good business strategy to keep litigation down. The whole point is you swarm them with litigation so they shut up. Like that's the whole issue. Like if you make the cost of speaking out so high that they don't want to do it, then you're enforcing the NDA. So it doesn't even make a tactical business sense, but he said it because it makes it sound like they're being nicer about it than it seems like they actually are.
Well, and something else with like regard to non-competes is that a lot of non-competes, even if you sign it, they're not actually enforceable. Like if you were to take it to court, if as an employer, you say you can't work anywhere at all for 2 years, you would lose that. You can't just like, contracts where you sign away your ability to work completely, they're not legally enforceable. But it seems like Jared is trying to say that this is exactly what Crowder's contract was. But you have the legal costs, like you said. So sometimes it might just be, and I think Jared kind of alludes to this, it's just cheaper to accept it, take it on the chin, find another job, than like lose potentially tens of thousands, if not more, trying to take it to court. So Jared was in his video, he didn't say he was being sued by Crowder. He is now currently being sued by Crowder. I just don't want Steven Crowder anywhere near those kids. Jared Mattello, also known as Jared Monroe, did say in documents that they have. So now Crowder is suing Jared. Do you think that there is the potential for the fact that, yeah, it's just Jared and Hillary scorned by Crowder? They are malevolently trying to otherwise good guy bring him down for personal gain, which is that's the narrative that Crowder's team is painting.
I mean, I think where they lose me on their narrative is the money issue, because if they're offering her more money than she would get in court, it has to be some other term. But like to be like 100% fair, we don't know what goes on inside a marriage. It is possible, like at least theoretically possible, that the wife in the scenario is trying to just damage the husband as much as possible. We've seen that, even if it doesn't make monetary sense, like 100%. But like when I'm looking at the evidence as presented, and they're not saying that they're just going after Crowder just to hurt Crowder. They're saying it's about the money when it seems like she's turning down money. And also, like in the court filings, from what I recall, Crowder's the one who wanted sole custody and she wanted joint custody. So
that is accurate.
So it doesn't line up with the story. So Jared, in the context of, and I don't know the context, I've never spoken to Jared, and I wouldn't have texted that because it just comes off so bad. But like in the context of Crowder trying to get full custody, like that's a little softer of a message than if Hillary was trying to get full custody and Crowder was fighting for joint.
Right. And I mean, to that quote, like you said, it sounds really bad. I don't know. Does Jared know, like if someone is actually violent, I could see you saying, oh, I don't want that person around kids. That sounds terrifying, but we don't have any proof of that, I will say. But that's exactly why I think a lot of people now are like, all right, well, if neither party has anything to hide and Jared wants the NDA released and Crowder, they're all on the up and up, why not just release the NDA? Because Cernovich, whose background I think is law, he was saying, well, you could just agree to lift it and we could see receipts. You know, this is all public. Ideally, I guess for the parties, it wouldn't be. But now that it is, it would potentially be a good way to clear your name.
I mean, yeah. Like it's hard to say I want transparency, but this guy's not allowed to talk. Like, it's hard to say that we're doing this for our 30 employees. As long as our 30 employees never say a word about this because we got them NDA'd up the you know what. Like, so it's a bad position to argue from. But, you know, my guess is if they're enforcing an NDA on him 6 years after he left, there's something that went down between the two. They're falling out and they don't want that version out there, whether it's the full true version or not. Cause you know, everybody has a side to a story, right? So, you know, but the problem is we can hear side A and we can't hear side B. And I know side C somewhere in between is going to be the true version of the story, but like, we can't even hear part two of it. So I don't trust the video. It did not change. Honestly, it kind of affirmed some of the stuff that they were trying to like put down because they ignored things. And there's like inconsistencies even in the evidence that they presented.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think also relevant that I don't think we've mentioned yet is Steven is, in addition to now suing Jared, previously he already was suing his ex-wife and her family for, I think, $1 million, potentially more in damages. For like defamation, lost revenue, I think kind of in connection with the video, the Ring video that was released the infamous one now.
That's actually not Steven. This is what's weird about that. That's Louder with Crowder is suing Hillary, some of her family members. And people are saying her best friend, but I'm going to say friend and attorney. So like that's the company suing them, which is really unusual. And it's not defamation. They're saying it's torturous, like interference, which is like interfering with their business. And right. I think it's from the video, but like that's very unusual for the business to sue somebody in the middle of a divorce. And if you already have the allegation of lawfare and like trying to overwhelm people in legal bills, you using the company to file against her family and maybe her friend maybe her best friend. That's a little red flag.
Right. Well, Pearl, who is like, you know, we were talking about like public opinion. She has come out as like one of Steven Crowder's most vocal defenders. Crowder case update. Hillary Crowder is receiving $25,000 per month in child support. Steven Crowder has been covering her legal fees thus far. Hillary reached out to Steven's friends and coworkers in an attempt to, just cuts off there. Jared is being sued because he was involving himself in a private divorce in which he was recruited by Hillary Crowder to assimilate negative PR assets to put pressure on Steven in an attempt to extort him. They're trying to put pressure on Steven in the divorce. This is messy. This is like really messy.
To be fair, this is one of the things that Gerald actually explained pretty well. In the state of Texas, the estate has to pay for it. So because Hillary doesn't work, and she used to work, and she used to make more money than Crowder, but Crowder wanted her to be a stay-at-home mom, he's the only one in the estate that is making money for it. So yeah, like he has to pay for it. And as for the child support, I mean, you know, it's, what is it, 17% of your monthly income? I mean, that tells me Steven Crowder is doing pretty well for himself. And I believe, according to Gerald, it wasn't Hillary that was recruiting it wasn't Hillary that said that comment about their PR strategy. It was
her father.
Yeah, it was her father. Which, you know, listen, like anything can look bad in one isolated message. But to be fair, like if I'm going up against a media personality and I'm not a media personality, I gotta prepare for that. Like she hired an entertainment lawyer to prepare for that. By the way, one of the other things that Gerald was upset about is that's the lawyer that represented the woman that ruined Trevor Bauer's career, which, by the way, that woman did ruin Trevor Bauer's career. But like, it's a celebrity attorney. Like I want the best lawyer I could have. Mm-hmm. Like Crowder's lawyer is a lesbian. I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying.
Well, something else that I know in the video and in the actual lawsuits or one of them, because there's a lot of legal documents that like, again, this is like a lot. Crowder's team is trying to paint Hillary as like, well, you're the one who is trying to make this all public. They underscore the fact that she is the one who first filed for divorce. And I think the case wasn't originally sealed. Hillary, for her part, she says that she only filed for divorce because she found out that Steven had been talking to a divorce attorney. It's just, yeah, this is a lot. Do you think that this is going to be affecting Steven's career? I mean, some might argue that the whole point of this all was to affect Steven's career. What do you think? I mean, he's still getting like solid views. A lot of people would still be more than happy to have the views Stephen Crowder does. I think it's fair to say, though, that actually ever since the Daily Wire thing, his views have been lower. And I think public opinion has kind of been like, I'm a little wary of this guy.
I would, if I was him, I would just try to like settle this, like, you know, as quickly as possible. Maybe he did try that. Who knows? I think, look, it can only damage him. Like if this stuff comes out, like that is a true thing that they're bringing up. And like his attempts to like win in the court of public opinion have been, you know, it might fool like his core audience, but it seems like it kind of brings up more questions because she doesn't release stuff. A bunch of people that are perceived to be on her side or on her side have NDAs, and it's not a great look. And like, by the way, this is one of the reasons why divorces are so unbelievably messy and nasty, especially when you have money. So in that regard, I do feel bad for him just because, you know, person to person, I wouldn't want that to, you know, I wouldn't want my personal life regardless to be public. I feel bad for Hillary for the same reason, but you know, like this is a situation that you put yourself in. Like if you have so many former employees that can't talk and the ones that can talk don't have nice things to say about you, like that starts to form a pattern. I mean, number one on his list was Dave Landau and he didn't sign an NDA. And he hasn't stopped talking about like stuff related to Crowder.
Yeah. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with Owen Benjamin, but he was another kind of former co-host of Crowder's. And I don't think he signed an NDA either because he's also been speaking about similar behaviors on set, similar tactics. He, before Jared ever came out, was talking about the type of lawfare that Jared was being subjected to. So we have, I mean, Jared, we have Dave Landau, we have Owen Benjamin, Hillary Crowder now, and apparently like Sven Computer, he has not really said anything following his abrupt departure from Crowder's show. Like that's why obviously I want to hear both perspective, but it's just, it seems like if like these at least 10 people who used to work with you or be involved in your personal life are now all conspiring against you. It's like, why have you made so many enemies in your personal life and former business? Like you run a YouTube show.
Yeah.
This is just, it's a lot. It's a lot.
Why do you hold secrets better than like the national security agencies when you're running a YouTube show? It's odd. But I will say like, again, like part of what makes it difficult to believe the Team Crowder side is that Hillary's income, alimony, all of that is going to be dependent on the success of Stephen. Like, you know, there's speculation that she's going to write a book, which, by the way, the working title, amazing.
He changed my mind, or how Stephen changed my mind.
So good. That's not like a permanent source of income. Like she would be dependent on alimony from Stephen. So like her damaging him financially, like just to do it would make her insane, especially when she's suing for joint custody, not for sole custody. So there's a lot of things that don't add up. And like, it's not just, you know, it's not just like, I want to pick this side versus that side. It's like, you look at what the situation is. You look at what you're presented thus far and you have to make a judgment.
Mm-hmm. Grover Rogers says, come on, this is a lot of time on Crowder and his circle. The Daily Wire Candace Owens split is way more interesting and topical. Crisis King. So I did an entire like 4-hour space on that issue. That is on Twitter and actually on my YouTube channel. You can watch it. I also did a stream reacting to that. I have another video on the core of the issue, Crisis King, also being edited. So I don't worry. I've also covered that quite extensively. Let's catch up on some super chats. Charlie Rao says, Lauren, make Sean and his fiance catch baby fever so he'll finally start wearing collared shirts and sensible shoes. Is that the determining factor to how a man dresses? It's just like, as soon as you're a dad, you can't help it. The collared shirts, they just grow out of your existing shirts.
I want to know how he knows what kind of shoes I wear. who told him that?
He's been following you all the events. He's looking at the photos. Spencer Harmon, Sono Banna in Nashville off of White Ridge Road. Best sushi in Nashville. Pricey, but delicious. I will check it out. I really like all-you-can-eat sushi places. Us, like me, Liam, who my husband, you, and a bunch of people did really good all-you-can-eat sushi in Arizona, I think, AmFest year before last. Yeah. You can't really get good all-you-can-eat sushi in Nashville. There's all-you-can-eat sushi, but it's basically just avocado rolls. Very
when we go to if we get to go to this place, we're not going to order anything. They're just going to – it's like chef service because it's this guy's friend. It's really nice. Yeah.
That's cool. I'm 100% there. I'll fight you naked. I would have pew-pewed Crowder by now. JK, disavow. Jiggly Calzone, just want to say I appreciate all these right-wing commentators saving their infighting and drama for a critical election year. Okay, so Trump is like, you know, Trump is that. The election is in many, many months, which is basically lifetimes in like the online world.
We don't even got a primary, so we got to fight with each other. Like, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And also Sean covers a lot of stuff related to crime. So if you don't, you know, if you're not happy with this video, then definitely go ahead and check out his other stuff. So, yeah, I mean, do you think that, like, it seems like there's just a lot happening in the conservative media sphere? Is that, like, is there something in the water? What? Because as that commenter pointed out, we do have, like, Crisis King, Candace stuff going on, Crowder now. It's just, it's a lot. Do we not have other things to talk? Like, why is this all happening at the same time?
It's on the heels of the Tucker Fox split up too. So yeah, there's definitely a shakeup and all that. And I don't know, a lot of this for me was down to like, comes down to usually where if you work for a company and you're like talent, eventually you get to the point where you can be more successful on your own. And then like a bunch of disagreements end up leading to you breaking up and going on your own. So like at first I thought that was like the situation, cause that's almost always the situation. That's Tommy Lahren in The Blaze and like all these other various things where they just have a sudden falling out with their network. But yeah, I think this time it's just, you know, a little bit too much lead in the water, everybody getting a little crazy. And that's the only solution. Cause a lot of this is like real petty, like, you know, personal stuff. And I don't know.
Okay, I will be honest with you guys. I just took a drink and I spilled a chai latte like all over my hair because apparently I can't drink. But so I think there is a difference between what's going on with Crowder, which honestly seems to be based around interpersonal drama, versus I would actually say like the friction between Tucker and like Candace and their old networks, that actually is kind of born out of the fact that we are going into an election year. Like conservative media, if you're a talent, your job is to talk about different issues, whether that be Israel right now or heck, maybe election stuff. Both Candace and Tucker, they kind of came under fire for having positions different from their own network. So this is almost a question of like, what are talent allowed to talk about? And Tucker and Candace, they're both kind of more dissident, right? Versus their networks, Daily Wire and Fox, obviously very establishment. I think it's actually kind of more indicative that there is a split between establishment and like new right conservatives. Yeah. That's why some of this drama is occurring, is because there's infighting within the conservative movement. There's infighting when it comes to Israel, foreign aid, you know, how hard do we go on the idea of election interference? Like that actually is something that will affect the election going forward. I mean, we saw that kind of like with Nikki Haley, there were like establishment people, not even like, no one really liked Nikki Haley, but like Democrats loved her.
I do think on the right, there definitely is like an undergirding issue. And a lot of it is like, what is America's role in the world? It's a foreign policy related issue. Like this will come up from time to time on both sides of the aisle. And right now that is a huge fight. And like the more non-interventionist side is represented by Tucker Carlson, first and foremost. Right. Candace Owens, I really haven't watched enough of the clips. Like I've heard a lot of the allegations and whatnot. And I've seen some very questionable tweet that she liked. I have seen that. So like, don't think I'm ignoring that. But like Tucker Carlson is definitely on that side of like reduce American power in the world, like reduce role overseas. And like Ben Shapiro is like the contrast of that, that, you know, if we leave this part of the world, it will create a vacuum and that will produce more conflict. So like that definitely is a fight that we're seeing right now.
100%. And like what's kind of interesting is that I think even though a lot of conservatives are all fighting about this, like you have kind of like pro-intervention versus more critical of it, a lot of these people still all galvanize around Trump, right? Because I think Trump, he's definitely not an isolationist. He's definitely also very pro-Israel still, but he was the correct balance of, I guess, soft power, where you didn't have these conflicts breaking out. I mean, like under Biden, it's only been, I mean, 3-4 years, but we already have like what happened in Afghanistan, what happened in Russia, Ukraine, what's kicking off in the Middle East. I think even if you're like pro or anti, like neocon, Trump is still a better solution because it's best to avoid these conflicts entirely rather than wonder how much do we intervene in them.
Yeah, because hey, Trump is kind of unpredictable. He's like, listen, no more foreign wars, none of that. Soleimani in Iraq, dead. I'm killing you. Listen, I want to be friends with Russia, maybe. I want to talk to Putin, but also I'm going to arm the Ukrainians more than Obama did, like, in the lead up. Like, he honestly, like, saying one thing and kind of doing another is not bad foreign policy. It keeps everybody on their toes. Like
It does that. So we're going to be wrapping up, but we'll catch up on the super chats. J-Mac, nah, AJW doesn't need dad clothes. He needs to jump on the weight train and start getting them gains. Muscle shirts and 5-inch seam shorts all day or a day. Time to get swole, brothers.
Listen, I do have to exercise. I'm getting old. It's just true.
Yeah, I tell myself I need to start working out like habitually, like every month. And then actually I carry my baby a lot. So my upper body strength is surprisingly good. But
you
cardio
got those mom arms. Like you
I do. I have mom arms now. Cardio is a weak spot, though. Logan L., the left is pro-socialism, pro-taxes, pro-theft. Nax McDonald says, what did Sean think of Jeremy Boring appearing on Lauren's Twitter space on Monday? I just thought instead of gatekeeping, why can't more people like him just discuss the issues?
So, I mean, I want to say it's good and I totally watch everything that Lauren does and would have definitely been in that Twitter space. But I spent like 12 hours editing that that Anna Kasparian video. So I actually haven't listened to the full space yet. I just haven't had time. But I mean, I think it's good if like if there's a debate involving him and then he appears in the space to talk to people that he wouldn't normally talk to. I think that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I was super impressed that he bothered to show up. He didn't need to. It was like 10 p.m. on a work day. Very impressive. Like, you can all the criticisms of Jeremy you want, but you can't say that that wasn't ballsy and definitely unexpected. That was my first ever Twitter space. By the way, follow me and Sean on X. That was my first ever Twitter space. It was quite an event. And even though I at one point did have to put my daughter down to sleep, so you can kind of hear her in the background. She had a lot to weigh in on things as well. Death by Sloth says Sean is a fraud. His positions are not nya or nya.
Because I say fraud, and then yeah. Fraud. Thank you for that. Thank you for those references.
John Hendy says, I think that infighting is inevitable amongst commentators since you absolutely need to have an ego to put yourself out there. That's true. I mean, I think it's also true of politicians as well. Like for someone to say, hey, of everyone out there, you must listen to me or you should listen to me or I should be in charge. There's definitely a lot of that going on.
It is inevitable to a certain extent that you're going to have disagreements. But like I disagree with Lauren on a fair amount of stuff and like we get along right now. Like when I check back, I'm going to see the Quartering reply to some of more of my stuff. And I think the Quartering is a wonderful person. And the mm-hmm. fact that I might disagree with them on this issue like doesn't change anything in that regard. So it depends how you handle it. Like we can be like the left where they want to throw, you know, an Anna Kasparian like out of the club, off a bridge, you know, or whatever. And Cenk as well by proxy because they're actually loyal to each other. And that's like horrible. You can't have that in a cult. Or we can disagree. We could talk about our disagreements when the topic comes up and then move on. Like it's not that big of a deal.
I agree. I don't think it needs to be like personal. And I think that's also, I mean, I think one of the reasons why all this infighting is happening because, you know, the idea that let's say like Tucker and Fox disagree or Candace and the Daily Wire disagree on something, I think that should be fine. You know, on Blaze, my views are not Glenn Beck's views. I think that's okay. It doesn't mean that I can't agree with a lot of what Glenn has to say. Hopefully he feels likewise. But I also feel like it's almost the right needing to reconcile the fact that in some ways for some issues and for some people, we do almost operate like the left. And I think right now that's kind of coming to a head. And I hope we get to a point where it's okay to have these disagreements. We talk about it. It's not a big deal. You know, I was against people severing friendships with like COVID stuff or Trump stuff. And I'm definitely against people severing friendships over like anything going on now.
Let's win some stuff and then argue about what we're going to do with winning positions rather than argue with what losing position we're going to take.
Yes, that is well said. But we all know that the right doesn't really like to win. Okay, so we have more super chats to get through. I think StreamYard is kind of glitching because it's not highlighting all of the ones you guys are sending in. So apologies, but I'm going to try to get to everybody. Okay, Sean's view of the Destiny debates with Jordan Peterson and Norman Finkelstein. Any debates with him going forward? Well, like we mentioned, you're going to be at the Vulcan with Destiny.
Listen, I watch everything that Destiny does, totally 100%. So I definitely watched that, and I wasn't like making two videos a day. Yes. And my opinion was they were good. I think they were both very goods, and there was like good points on both sides, but also the good counterpoints on the other side, because I've seen that debate.
Michael Eddington, although from what I've seen, I haven't seen the whole thing, but I saw clips of it. The Jordan Peterson Destiny conversation might be good topics or might be good content for a video. Michael Eddington says, thank you for hosting a pretty historic live. No problem. It was definitely the intent and what I knew would be happening as I went into this space while making dinner. Adam Baldwin says, great to see Sean here. Love all your videos from England. P.S. Lauren sent you audio from space yesterday for you to UL to YouTube.
Upload?
Oh, it's already uploaded. My producer managed to do it, but yeah, trying to upload a 4-hour audio thing is no small feat. Okay, I think we're all caught up. All right, so Sean, where can people follow you? Shout out anything and everything that you're into right now.
Look, I'm on YouTube and all that, but if you go to actualjusticewarrior.com, like, you could just find all my links there. I finally got it centralized in one space. I'm doing crime videos, a lot of them, keeping track of the left response videos and whatnot. I might make my own video on this Crowder situation, today, but I don't know when it's going to be out, and, who knows? Yeah. So just find me, links, I'm sure, in the description.
Yeah, definitely. And Sean's videos, they're great. I love his coverage of crime stuff. I like, anytime I'm talking to leftists and they like bring stuff up, I will openly admit I totally steal your talking points as my own so I can appear better educated than I actually am on the issue. So definitely give him a follow. He's also been doing great videos about that Tiffany Hanyard woman.
Oh, the super mayor. Yes.
The super mayor.
Matt Christensen had me on to discuss that, which was actually really nice. Challenge of breaking down the whole scandal, it takes me an hour in my last video to do one portion of it in 30 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, guys, if you're not following that story, this woman is a super villain who actually is a mayor. And she's been kind of publicly destructing for a while. And Sean has been covering every bit of it. So definitely check out those videos. And yeah, I guess that's basically it. Don't forget to like, subscribe, appreciate Sean a lot. Check out Fast Growing Trees, link also in the description. And we will see you next time. Take care.